For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Are you ready?
I am ready.
Oh, guys, you know who's here. You know who's here. It's Leah. Leah's here. But before we get into it, oh, by the way, this is the Full Blast Podcast, and I am Jeff Fader. Before we get into it, let's take care of a little business. First things first, my friends at Broadbeck Ironworks, makers of the 2x72 grinder. This is a dynamite grinder for you. And if you go to BroadbeckIronworks.com and put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you can get 10% off everything. Grinders, attachments, parts, all that stuff. Leah uses a Broadbeck. I use a Broadbeck. You don't have to just be a knife maker, ladies and germs. If you're trying to remove material, this is the machine for you, period. So go to BroadbeckIronworks.com, put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, 10% off. Next are my friends at Evenheat, manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com. Got to use that tap control, that solid state drive. And let me tell you what I use it for. I'm using it for heat treating, all my hardening. I'm using it for the tempering. So I'm using high temperatures for stainless steels and stuff like that. And I'm using low temperatures for tempering. I'm also using even lower temperatures because I dry out my wood for stabilizing in my Evenheat. And it works great. So go to evenheat-kiln.com. Check it out. If you are trying to harden something, this is the machine for you, especially if you're trying to work with very specific materials. evenheat-kiln.com. I got to tell you, I want to thank my guy, Lawrence Lake at Maritime Knife Supply. There ain't nobody better than Lawrence Lake at Maritime Knife Supply. And I'm looking forward to making an announcement in the future that is near and dear to my heart. I got a message from Lawrence in regards to what he's going to be doing next. And I cannot talk about it, but I'm desperate to. Maritime Knife Supply is your one-stop shop for belts, abrasives, steels, kilns, forges, presses, heat treating ovens, anything you need. And if he doesn't have it, reach out to him. He'll have it. He's in Canada. And if you're a Canadian knife maker or a metal worker, you gotta use Lawrence Lake Maritime Knife Supply. And if you're in the United States, he's just as fast as everybody else. He's a dynamite guy. He was just at Blade Show Texas. He's going to be down at Blade Show Atlanta. He told me some things I just can't wait to tell you about. I'm very excited about it. And besides the fact that he's got a ton of steel selection, I was just forging out a piece of 1080 hex bar. He sent me, he had a pile of perfect hex bar for forging integrals. Stuff is awesome. He's a great guy. MaritimeKnifeSupply.com, and you put in, there is no promo code, but if you get a 10-pack of abrasive belts, you do get 10% off. So go to Maritime Knife Supply. I'm telling you, when it comes to, I'll say this, when it comes to supporting real schools and real influential places where people can learn about metalworking, he is on board. Maritime Knife Supply. That's all I'm going to say. I want to say more, but that's all I'm going to say. I love this guy. Next are my friends at Trojan Horse Forge, makers of the Saber-Rel knife finishing vise. Their vices are built in the heart of Texas, and they're designed to take your handle finishing to a whole new level. There is nothing better. I have two of them. All my knives are on the Saber-Rel knife finishing vise. It's fantastic. Go to TrojanHorseForge.com. Put in the promo code FULLBLAST10. You can get 10% off. They're great. Great company. I love these guys. I'm with them. Next are my friends at Baker Forge, BakerForge.com, or at Baker Forge and Tool on Instagram. If you want to get involved with very, very cool, easy to work with exotic steels, go to BakerForge.com. Koi is, I don't know how he does it, frankly. And I know how a lot of these guys do everything. I don't know how he does anything. So it's not that he does it. It's the fact that every time he does it, it always comes out right. The steel that he makes is on the money. The core is in the middle. I've used companies where the core is not in the middle, and you know it. As soon as you heat treat, it turns into a banana. Koi gets it. Koi and the guys get it every single time. It's super easy to work with. It is awesome. It's all comes annealed, so you can use your crummy bandsaw to cut it. You can use your torch. Now, don't use your torch. You can use your, sorry about that. You can use your right angle grinder, whatever you need to get rid of this material, and then grind it and heat treat it. And then when you're done, you use the special etchant that they love, Gator Piss. G-A-T-O-R-P-I-S-S. Gator short for alligator, piss short for urine. Stuff is the best etchant around. Ain't nothing better than this. So go to BakerForge.com and put in the promo code FULLBLAST and get you 10% off. Or you can go to my friends at Texas Ferry Supply. I love these guys. Texas Ferry Supply has Gator Piss, among other things. Texas Ferry Supply is a great outlet for blacksmiths, bladesmiths, farriers. They specialize in farrier stuff. And if you go to Texas Ferry Supply, TexasFerrySupply.com, and you put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you're going to get 10% off everything. 10% off everything. You've been a huge supporter of Knife Talk and this podcast and me. Evan and the guys at Texas Ferry Supply are awesome. That's where I get my rhino wet. If you need your rhino wet in the United States and you want to deal with Texas Ferry Supply, that's where you go. 10% off with a Knife Talk 10. Next, my friends at Total Boats, totalboats.com/fullblast for all your adhesive paints, primers, polishing compounds for boaters and DIYers. They understand that your projects need to go smoothly. And let me tell you what, they're always smooth when I use Total Boat. Their two-part epoxy is only epoxy that I use. I use their UV Cure Clear resin that has a little flashlight. This stuff is in, hardens everything for little cracks and stuff. And I definitely use their CA glue, their crazy glue. Their type of crazy glue, CA glue. Stuff is awesome. It's good enough for Keith Deason, Derek Fromalden, Keith Johnson, Keith Mitchell, and that scoundrel Jimmy Dress. It's good enough for you. So go to totalboat.com/fullblast. See what the fuss is about. Get yourself some of that Fathom Thick set. That stuff is for making that handle, that hybrid handle material. And they have dyes, and they have pigments, and they have the glitter. They got the whatever you need. All right. So stop playing. And by the way, all these affiliate codes and these links, they're all in the show notes of where you're listening to this, so you don't have to send me a message. Once in a while, I got a guy say, What was that again? You go into the show notes. I'm very specific. Everything's in there. Next are my friends at GL Hansen & Sons. Greg Hansen and Mikey are doing it, man. They are doing it. They just sent me a block of hoopla. I needed a special block of hoopla. If I got a customer who does a great job. And he got me that block, and this stuff is awesome. People are asking for Gicarda from GL Hansen & Sons. Gicarda is a unique composite of natural fibers and fabrics mixed with epoxy under pressure and heat. Bofa, Ripple Cut, Tuxini, Mahi Mahi, Radioworm, Gicarda, Pheasant, Colorama, Hoopla. I know you're saying, what is all this? It's awesome. It's handle materials. He makes these loaves, giant loaves, all these colors and stuff. And he does a cross cut, and it looks like brain coral and tie-dye. It looks all this great stuff, and it's the best. I love GL Hansen & Sons, and their customer service is the best, and they're great people. They're great. It's a great company. And if you go to gcarta.bigcartel.com, that's where you can see what he has, and you can buy it from him. You can also follow him on Instagram as g.l_Hansen & Sons, and once again, it's in the show notes of the podcast. But definitely, this is you're talking about a serious individual. Love this guy. GL Hansen & Sons, gcarta.bigcartel.com. Next are my friends at Tormek. Love it. I am so excited. I found out that I'm going to Blade Show, and my guys at Tormek, I convinced them to go to Blade Show all the way from Sweden. My guys are going to be there. So go to Tormek_Sharpening Instagram and look at what 50 years of being in business looks like with an awesome knife sharpening system. They have different sharpening systems for different types of needs. If you're sharpening your chisels, this is the one for you. If you are a professional chef and you're looking for something that you can tune up your knives easy, they have something special for that. If you're a home cook and you want something easy to use and you want it to look good on your counter and not look like you got a giant drill press on your counter, they have something for you too. So go to Tormek.com and see what the fuss is about. I love it. I got three of them. I got like five Tormeks, honestly. Five? Yeah, I got five. It's embarrassing. And some two of them, one of them hasn't even gotten in the box yet. But that's okay. I love them. I love these guys. I love Tormek. I am 100% with them. So Tormek underscore sharpening. And anybody who has got a question about Tormek, you could definitely reach out to them on social media. They're awesome. Or if you want to reach out to me at Full Blast Podcast on Instagram, I'm happy to answer your questions. And last but certainly not least, my guys at Nordic Edge, Nordic_Edge on Instagram, nordicedge.com.au. Not only do they sell supplies for knife makers, leather makers, spoon carvers, blacksmiths, bladesmiths, however you identify, They also teach classes. And if you want to learn about blacksmithing, you want to learn about spoon carving, you want to learn about weatherworking, if you're in Australia, go to nordicedge.com.au. They have a great educational system. But their reputation for selling the right stuff is with them. They're awesome in Australia. And I'm only saying that because I don't know if you know this, Leah, but there was, you know about Rhino-Wet?
No.
Rhino-Wet is the best sandpaper for hand sanding. And okay. It started out as a company that made sandpaper for like automotive people. You're a metalworker. You're a real metalworker. So this is the stuff that you should think about. So this stuff is awesome. And knife makers have been knowing about this for a while, that it's like, it holds the grit really well. It's for hand sanding steel. It's unbelievable. And it's like world renowned as being the best. Well, there's this company in Australia that found some counterfeit Rhino-Wet. They got the, who knows where it came from, but it was counterfeit sandpaper, if you can believe it or not. And it was a big production because, you know, it's like, it's expensive, but it's worth it. You know, like I've mortgaged a house just to buy Rhino-Wet. Stuff is awesome and it's worth every penny. Nordic Edge has the right stuff. So does Gamaco. But Nordic Edge is, they made a whole point about the fact that we don't fool around with counterfeit products. Anything you get from Nordic Edge, you can guarantee it. And let me just say one last thing. They have the guidance to help accelerate your creativity and the tools, products, and supplies to help you manifest your ideas, nordicedge.com.au. Ain't nobody better than them down there. I mean, I swear to God, I love those guys. Bjorn, Sausage Man Forge, you kidding me? I'm fired up because my favorite is here. Leah Arapach, you know who she is. She's a fantastic person, but she's also incredibly talented sculptor, a blacksmith, a metalworker, a sculptor. She's a sculptor. She's the best. Leah, so glad you're here.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me, Jeff.
Are you kidding me? I like been pouncing on you to come back on this thing for like a year.
And I'm finally ready.
I'm so glad. How have you been?
All things considered, I think I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Everything is in bloom right now in California, which is amazing. But I also just got like slammed with hay fever like 2 days ago. So I'm a little sinusy, but, doing good, doing great.
So you have a whole, so what's been going on in the past year?
Oh my God.
Where do we start?
Well, let's start. Last October, one of my shopmates decided to leave. And at the same time, I was also talking to I have new landlords and they are very cool. And that's not normally the story. It's usually like the beginning of the end. One of them is a metal sculptor. They're all creative. They're all like motivated and awesome. So they've just been like phenomenal in the transition. But we had this 15-foot loft in our shop that they were very concerned about. And so we started talking to an engineer about like the seismic issues. And long story short, one of my shopmates decided to move out and we decided to just tear the loft out. And the timing was such that a blacksmith who is originally from California, but at the time lived in Seattle, her name is Sarah Fetterman.
Oh, sure.
Had reached out to me and was expressing some desire and kind of meeting some of the California blacksmiths. And she was like, I want to get out of Seattle. So I invited her to come camp for the weekend at Oktoberfest, which is like a pretty amazing California Blacksmith Association event that happens every year in October. Unfortunately, the same weekend as Maker Camp, but we'll get to that. But so she came down and, you know, in that time, my shopmate decided to leave, and so there was this space open in my shop, and we decided to do this whole build-out and put in gallery walls, and she moved in, and now it's like this white walls, open, airy, beautiful shop that's taken months to get there, but like at this moment, you know, the power got rerun for my power hammer couple weeks ago, and like we're finally operational after like 3 or 4 months of just like pushing. So it's very exciting. We've been having a really great time together, and she's wonderful, and she's making a really cool sculpture right now, and it's just really fun to have this other talented artist in the shop working the same hours that I am, and it's just been an absolute delight. So that's like the biggest news I've got going on right now.
I cannot be more happy for you. I can't think of anyone who deserves this than you. It's so hard to share space with someone.
Yeah.
But as an artist, there is a lot of that whole, you get the juices flowing when you are sharing a space with other people, when you're all kind of on the same wavelength in regards to being creative. And you sometimes you can have these amazing moments where your energy is feeding off each other, and you're just kind of like excited to work alongside someone else doing different things. And it can be amazing. It can also be a disaster. So I only know this from experience. It can be like in the beginning, you think, oh, I'm going to get the creative juices flowing, and this person's fired up and I'm fired up. And then it gets weird, and then it's like it's problematic. But I'm so happy that this is a good thing for you, because creativity, you're in this great position as a sculptor, because you kind of live and die by manifesting your own creativity. Like I know that I based on the work I've seen of yours and just talking with you on and off this and stuff, that whole idea of manifesting creativity is part of your lifeblood.
Yeah, it's like it's a compulsion. And yeah. I think that like come October 31st of last year, which was like the day before the loft was going to start coming down, and then like 4 days later I went in for a second eardrum surgery. Spoiler alert, I still don't have my hearing back, but that's whatever. But it basically brought my shop to its knees for like 3 or 4 months. And I started really losing my mind a little bit, because like I didn't realize how I mean, it sounds stupid to say, but like it is very important for me to be creating. And yeah. If I can't do that, like it would have been a different story if it was in the middle of June and I could have turned to my gardens, which are another form of creativity for me. But since it was like the dead of winter, I just lost all my creative outlets at once. And like you can just, after you're working on your shop for 4 months and you're just pushing the broom around and getting covered in dirt and not really like, there's a lot of sacrifice that comes with being a sculptor, but if it's like all on the front end, it's just really, you start losing a sense of who you are. So I would be remiss if I did not say that I like was definitely struggling with like some existential crises over the past couple months that I'm just now coming out of, but like it's painful when I can't create, like
but
really painful.
But I wonder if it's being creative or it's the act of executing the creativity. Like I talk to a lot of people, and one of the things that you said, something that is something that when I used to have interns, I used to talk to their parents, and their parents used to say, my kid wants to be a sculptor or an artist. What does it take? And I said, it takes compulsion. Yeah. If you're on, you have to see it like this. If you're on a deserted island with no hope of rescue, are you going to make sculpture or not? That to me is the telltale sign. Like you're doing it whether anyone sees it or not. And I used to think it's about being creative. But then I realized it isn't about the being creative. Creative people are creative. It's executing the creativity, which kind of locks it in terms of where the happiness is. To me, it was always the execution over the idea. Like the idea is great. It's this moment of coolness, and maybe you spend a little time and you're like, yeah, I should do this. But once you've, you know, after the pen is thrown out and you get the paper and you throw yourself around telling everybody what you're going to do, if you don't do it, is it really so great? Right? Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely 100% correct in my opinion. Like I am I'm like stronger on the craft side, and like you know, concepts are great, but that's the beginning of a piece of work. And so I think that the execution is extreme, that's the that's the process. That's the art. That's the journey for me. And I don't, I just came back from an art fair in LA, and there was this woman that was working with metal, but it was clear that she was not doing any of the metal work herself.
Right.
And so it was this, these bronze sculptures that they had left all the gates on and literally like taken a hunk of like, bronze that was cast and had the gates on it and just like clunking it on the floor such that like you can still see the ceramic shell that wasn't sandblasted off of it that just like fell out onto the floor and it was just put there. And people were like, wow, this is amazing. And I'm like, it's not done.
Right.
It's not done. Like, that's not, you know, that's not a concept to me. That's not a,
it's a lucky accident.
Yeah, sure.
To a certain
degree. The pieces would have been better if they had been sandblasted, cut free of their gates, patinaed and sealed and presented not on the floor.
Hmm.
And I don't know, maybe I'm getting into different territory, but I think it's the same spirit of like, what level of execution are we looking for here? When does that make a piece successful or not a piece at all?
That's the real one. It isn't about whether or not it's art or not. It's whether it's good or not.
Yeah.
On Knife Talk, I say all the time, knife making isn't art. And I get that. And I have to make this, years ago, I decided I need a controversial bit that, but it's not the kind of controversial bit that someone's going to throw a rock through my window. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
It's got to be like not aggressive. It can't be so aggressive that I got to worry about my life. So knives aren't art. It works. No one's losing their minds too hard. They're getting their feelings hurt, but that's okay too. It's for me, that really wasn't the issue. It's more about, is it successful work or not? That is really something that people don't understand. You can say anything is art, but it's a question of, is the intention of the artist seen in the execution of what they're trying to get across? That's the hardest part.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do have this conversation a lot with people from different, like people that are lawyers that are like wondering what I think and what, where I deem art to be, to like people that are, you know, my friend Tallulah, she runs and operates like this institution of a printmaking studio that has helped every famous artist create every public work that has been printed ever. And, we have interesting conversations about this where it's like, I think that for her, she has so much more of a grasp of like the context of art from history and is so up on all of these artists and what they're doing and who is relevant and what, and I'm just looking at like the bronze on the floor without the gates cut off. And I'm like, I can't get past it. I just can't get past. So I think it's all up to the beholder.
But also metal workers, and maybe you agree with me or not, metal workers in general, and I'm putting metal workers in, and if you're working with metal at all, any, during anything, you're a metal worker to a certain, I think. Metal workers are far more critical of metal sculpture than anybody else in regards to art.
Yeah.
Like I find that because a lot of metal sculptors have to learn the craft and then execute what they're trying to do. And you can see how things are made when you're a metal worker. So you cannot separate yourself from the process when you're looking at someone's work that you don't know. Like, let's say you walk into a gallery and it's all metal sculpture and you're looking at it. You're unconsciously reverse engineering how it was done, and then in your mind you're just like, that's not what, how they should have done it.
Yeah, and it's kind of weird like that, because I think of like directors and how they probably, like, I think that some of them watch a movie and they can't not focus on like how something was shot, or
right,
like they can't not see the editing points, which are like completely not obvious to someone like me. And the same for like, I can go into a museum and look at a painting and just like appreciate it for being a painting, but if it's a metal sculpture,
you're done.
I'm all up in there.
Yeah,
like I've got, you know, I am decoding the entire thing. So
you're trying to figure out the grit of sanding disc they used.
Yeah,
they definitely didn't use a flap disc for that one, or he overgrounded there, and then there's you can see the fact that it's too shiny there, and it needs to be a little bit more feathered in for it to be a good connection. I know you all. I know all about it.
Yeah, every inclusion, every pit. Yeah,
that's indeed. The worst. I hated it. I actually was involved. I'll tell you. I don't know if we talked about it since the last time you were here. I knew I did this giant sculpture, a gun sculpture.
Yes.
I did this goddamn thing, and it really was. And you can go back and I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to. So the backstory is, I'll do this real quick, is someone very involved with the town that I am's police department wanted to do a gun buyback program, and then they wanted to do something with the guns they bought back. Whatever you feel about it, I was brought to my attention that they wanted me to do the sculpture. And at first I thought, I don't really do political art anyway. And it's not really a material. I don't like found object art in general. I feel like it's really hard to take away. And you would know this yourself, because you don't really do anything with found object. If when you're making a sculpture with found objects, it's really hard to take away the vocabulary of the pieces that you're working with. So i.e. let's say you're making a sculpture and you throw a chain in there and then you weld the chain up, and if you see the chain in the sculpture, you'll never remove that vocabulary from your final product. You always know the chain's welded up in there, and that's part of the sculpture whether you like it or not. I don't like it because I feel as though it becomes it from a very subconscious level, it beats the brakes off the viewer, and then it pigeonholes your idea in regards. So that's I didn't want to do it, but I know the rest of the welding sculptors in this area, and I didn't want them to have the gun. That's what it came down to. And if you really, really, really want me to tell you the truth, I didn't want them to have the guns. And it was completely because I knew they weren't going to do it right, and they weren't going to be able to transform them. The welds would have been terrible. And I saw one guy, he was welding steel to cast iron, and the welds look like, you know, chicken shit. And you know what I'm talking about. And I was just like, I cannot allow these pieces of steel that are illegal to have any other way than the way I have them. Totally by the book. I'm totally by the book. Everything was by the book, letter of the law. I only did it because I didn't want these other metal workers to get their terrible paws on it. That is real spite. I did the sculpture out of spite, Leah. I'm telling you.
It sounds like it.
It was, you'd do the same thing. If, like, imagine somebody comes to you and say, Leah, I want you to do this sculpture, but it's going to be with the gates from Michelangelo's castle. And we want you to do it. Or if you don't want to do it, we'll give it to somebody else. You're doing it because you don't want anyone else to have it.
Yeah. 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 Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe I would, maybe I wouldn't. If they let me make it out of monsters and aliens.
Well, they'd say, no, here's the thing. You can do whatever you want with it. But if you pass, we're giving it to someone else.
Yeah, I'm not much it. For, I'm not, I don't pass. I usually don't pass. For better
can't
or worse.
Pass.
I mean, but, look, you know. That's we all know what happened with Metal Shop Masters. I did not pass on that show.
You know what? Now that I think about Metal Shop Masters, they should have kept going with it. It was so much more interesting than some of these cooking shows. It's so much more interesting.
Frank and I have recently, while I was away at Center for Metal Arts, which is, you know, a whole other thing we need to talk about, but Frank got obsessed with this Korean cooking show called Culinary Class Wars. And I must say it is the most phenomenal TV show I've seen in a long time.
Where would you find it?
I think it was on Netflix, but I'll circle back. But it was, I laughed, I cried. It was, and you know, everyone there was super creative, and it was more about like these different generations of chefs. So like the ones that are like old guard and like super established Michelin stars. And then all of these young, super talented chefs, and they're kind of heading off against each other. Not to get away from Metal Shop Masters,
same thing
to compare, right. You know, that show to Metal Shop Masters, I'd say, you know, yikes. One of them was really, really good. And the other one needed a lot of improvement.
I think in my heart of hearts, and I know how you feel about it, and I've had a few of the other people on this podcast betting through the years, I think that it was a great first attempt. And only because The only other metalworking you ever saw was Jesse James or Orange County Choppers. And that was it. There was no other. There were, and then, you know, Monster Garage, all those other Jesse James kind of affiliated shows and stuff like that. So the fact that you had something where people, I know most metal workers were all up in that show. It's just we're such a small group. Yeah. I think that it was the great first step. I think personally, and it would be impossible to do, is if you added group critique to the judging, I think that would be far more interesting. Then you could have them explain, and then they could defend themselves, and it made it more like art school. But then you'd lose everybody. You'd lose all the viewers. You'd lose all the viewers. All the viewers. Nobody would want to hear an art critique. They'd be like, "Oh my god, I got to sit through this fucking thing." They would hate it, but I would love it. I would watch every second if there was like a group critique situation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think what you're saying is right. Like, I was really excited to show what metal sculpture could be to people that didn't have as much like access to it. And I think it's all about, at the end of the day, it's all about the production company. And if they're focused on creating drama, like that's what you're going to get. And that was kind of like, that was the producers, as opposed to being like, we really genuinely do want to show what can be done with metal.
Right.
They would have like made it easier for us to do that, as opposed to kind of taking all of these like weird stereotypes about like metal sculpture and like mashing them all together and being like, make a sculpture with razor blades. And it's like, right. I get why you're saying razor blades because of the context of like the welding tests that are done with it, but it's not typically like even a wise or if you start with an ugly material,
yeah,
like a razor blade, like and like truly the artist did a really good job of like doing cool things with it, but it's like there, you know, there didn't need to be that many metal. I think I've already said this before, but metal sculpture is hard enough as it is without like these needless weird like barriers that they put on it. So I think that there were just mistakes were made.
You know, the funny thing is now that my daughter is out in California, my wife and daughter are out there now for spring break, my wife and I watch a little bit more TV than we ever did. And one of the things that we like watching is, believe it or not, the Great British Bake Off. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because these people are nice to each other.
Yeah.
And they're the only prick is the guy, what's his face? The guy with the blue eyes, Paul Hollywood. That guy, he's a prick. He's supposed to be a prick. Yeah. But everybody else is so nice to each other, and it's enjoyable because they seem like they're real people. I mean, obviously they're very extra animated for television, but it's like you don't feel like there's a lot of drama. You know, there couldn't be that in an American television. Everyone wants a little problem, and it's just like, yeah. I don't know. I think that it was a great first step, and I am ultimately saddened that there wasn't another attempt, only because I just feel as though more Americans or more people in general should see metalworking in a positive light. And it's not just like, you know, guys going into the ditches and stuff like that. I feel as though it was a great opportunity to show real skilled, talented craftsmen working on something. And I just kind of don't want it. I want that to still happen.
Yeah. And I think it will. I think it will. I think I'm seeing categorically more interest in metal sculpture than ever before. Like from what I'm seeing people like curatorial decisions of major museums to like art prizes in magazines, it seems to be that it's becoming more understood and appreciated in general. And so even if there isn't a TV show in the works or one in the future, which I'm sure there will be because they're, you know, there's like an endless ability to just keep creating content.
Right.
And then I think it is a genuinely interesting art form that will get another shot at that and hopefully is done by like a production company that like really wants to showcase the art side of it, you know?
And they had a tough spot too, because it was right in the middle of the beginning of the pandemic. There was a lot going against them. And I think, ultimately, if you really think about it, I think it was successful. Ultimately, it's just the timing probably wasn't right.
It had a lot of merits. I mean, what they were able to do was pretty incredible, and what they did and how they spent their time and money trying to bring this art form into the light. And for that, I'm extremely grateful. That's huge. For people to give a shit about what we do and want to show it is amazing.
Not to, I want to keep going, but I have to tell you, you were talking about shows that you watch. When you said you have the show that you and Frank watch, Hillary and I have the show. This is my new favorite thing. I never in my life would have thought that this would be as fun as it is. Have you seen The Pit?
No.
It's on HBO Max, and it follows Noah Wiley. You know who he is?
Yes.
He used to be on ER back in the 90s. He's We used to watch ER back in the 90s, and he was a young kid on ER. He's a young doctor.
Yeah.
And now he's like this old, grizzled ER doctor. He's the chief of the ER. And every episode is an hour on this. The season is a day in this emergency room. And I don't like blood. I don't like any of it. I don't like the human body in general. I don't want to know. I don't want to know. Every time I see my dentist, I say, I don't know how you can look in people's mouths. I just don't know. I have no idea. I watch it with my wife, who is a nurse practitioner. And it is so much fun because it's so accurate. She says it's the most accurate medical show she's ever seen. And she'll pause it and explain what's happening. And she'll be dialed in on the minutia of the CCs and the get to this and the maybe it's that. And she's dialed in because it's so good. And then she'll pause it and she'll explain to me what's happening. That has become my most favorite thing of all time, is to watch The Pit with her, because I feel like I'm getting this extra added, you know, it's so, and basically what we were talking about in regards to, you know, you were saying about directors, you know, watch a movie and then you don't think that the director would know or something like that. She's basically looking at this show the way you'd look at a metal shop.
Yeah.
Or a metal sculpture. And she's like seeing how good of a job it is.
Yeah.
And it's so much fun watching it for that reason. I'm getting like this extra behind the scenes thing. It's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, Hillary's probably watching it being like, oh, they just gave too many CCs of adrenaline to that guy. And he's going to start coding. Like, maybe that's what we need, is like a dramatization as opposed to like a reality competition show where it follows some metal sculptors or a group of blacksmiths around and.
It's funny that you say that, because all the people at Hillary's clinic are watching it. And
yeah.
The only thing that they have found that to be slightly inaccurate are like when you call the police and or for something or child protective services.
And those are also
like based on the state, it could be different. So everything down to the exact, like when he says the CCs, she's like, this is on the money. And but the crazy part is imagine these people are actors, but they're also acting in a different language. She said the way that they deliver, the way they deliver their lines in regards to how quick you're supposed to do something, the medical procedures that they're doing, their movements, it's like these people are real doctors. She's like, I'm shocked at how finely tuned in the medical stuff is. And that's what I think that we want in our TV shows, is like some realism, you know?
Yeah.
She's shocked. Sure. She's like, I've seen so many goddamn, you know, you and I have watched plenty of movies where somebody's welding something or like, you know, like Rambo's forging a knife out and you're just like, this is some bullshit. You know,
yeah.
It's just like, get me the fuck out of here. We have watched like 8 hours of she's looking through with a fine tooth comb and she's like, they got it on the money. Everything's on the money.
Yeah, that does matter and make a big difference, honestly. I have a friend down south, Tony Swatton.
Tony. A friend down south? You're talking about the guy who made the Infinity Gauntlet for the Avengers movie?
Yeah.
The guy who's made every sword for every superhero movie in Hollywood? He's Mr. Hollywood? Yeah, I know Tony Swatton.
Yeah.
He's famous.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Tony
Swatton. That's like saying,
you know Tony?
Yeah. That's like he's saying, hey, I know this guy. He's this actor. His name's Robert De Niro. You heard of him? My buddy Bobby.
Man. Well, Tony's—he comes to the California Blacksmith Association gathering, so we've become friends over the years, and I got to when I went down there for Monster Palooza, I got to go visit his shop and we hung out for a day. And him and my friend Heather McClarity, they're good friends and they live close by each other. Did a lot of work on The Mandalorian and like were able, like I think Heather was actually like, there was a real blacksmith, Heather, like doing the blacksmithing in the show so that it looked as real as possible. Like they had actual blacksmiths in like playing the actors.
Right.
I'm not sure if I'm supposed to be saying this.
That's okay. No, listen, you know what's trust me, when The Mandalorian came out and we had to do a whole, when it comes to knife talk, anything that has anything to do with hitting steel with anything, we got to talk about it. So yeah, I saw it, but just before we keep going, I'm friendly with Tony was supposed to be on this. We were talking a couple years ago. He's friends with Matt Stagner.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
They were on Man at Arms originally, and he's known Tony forever. And Tony and I were trying to get him. I want to get him on here at some point. He's a busy, busy guy. He makes all the swords for like all the movies.
Yeah.
He did the hook for Captain Hook. He did I need to do all this stuff for Mandalorian and stuff like that, but he did the Infinity Gauntlet for the Avengers movie. That's like, I mean, that is like holy grail shit right there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like the holy grail of metalworking, I think.
I think Doug Pryor might have worked on that with him too. And yeah, I mean, going to Tony's studio and seeing, because he has a whole showroom, like a massive showroom with all these incredible artifacts and props from, it's a really cool space.
Yeah, Wonder Woman, he did like the stuff for Wonder Woman. He once told the story of how the Super Bowl wanted him to make, a Bud Light wanted him to make a suit of armor out of Bud Light cans. And he had like 24 hours to do it. And he did a complete, there's a famous commercial where this knight comes out and the armor is made out of Bud Light cans. And he like knocked it out in like less than 24 hours. He's a super dude, man. He's the main guy. Like he's the main man when it comes to that stuff.
He's incredible. I mean, that does really speak to like expertise and experience, right? The fact that he can kind of do anything that comes his way quickly. I mean, because he's been working with Hollywood deadlines his entire career. So he's just like the consummate professional about like meeting any challenge and turning it out in a time frame that they want, which is incredible.
That's the hard part. That's the hard part that a lot of people don't understand when they're trying to find, like metalworking in general, is a lot. It all usually starts out as a hobby. You know, like I'm not talking about being a structural sculptor, a structural ironworker or fabricator or something like that. I'm saying someone who finds enjoyment in welding or blacksmithing or knife making or forging, they find it as a hobby and then they try to figure out ways in which to amortize this hobby into something that could be their, you know, their career. And there's one thing that stops a lot of them, and a lot of knife, this falls into the knife making category, is the concept of the deadline. And a lot of people will, and a lot of it comes from fear, but a lot of it comes from inexperience. I've been in metal shops where we have like, we get these, you know, jobs come through and the deadline is ridiculous. It's just like, are you kidding me? Are you going to get us sleeping bags? What are you doing to the boss? What are you doing? Why are we doing this? What are you crazy? And you do it. And the idea that somebody could come up to, he told another story, like Conan O'Brien show wanted him to do something and they came the night before and he stayed up all night and did it. And sometimes you have to take these opportunities regardless of whether or not your artistic ego agrees with it or not.
Yeah.
For the experience.
For the experience.
For the experience,
indeed.
You know?
Indeed.
Oh, God, Tony Swadden. That guy is something else. But you know what? Something else? You're something else. I wanted to talk to you. No, we got some things to talk about. Number one is, how is your experience at CMA?
Oh, my God. So that was my second time doing a period of time at CMA. I did a 2-week residency there this winter. That's an incredible program. I came back a completely changed artist.
Whoa.
I had never been to a residency, so I wasn't really sure what to expect. I went in there with all these crazy plans. And I was also like going back to what I was saying before about like being in the midst of an existential crisis, because like I have spent, you know, 2 months working on the shop, at that point 3 months working on the shop without getting to do anything creative or build anything, and just going straight into CMA after the holidays. And being like, oh, God, I haven't been on my power hammer in a while. I'm just, like, rusty. I don't know if I've got, like, any creative juices flowing as far as, like, being in the metal shop and going and, like, making all these preparations and photographing a model that I had built and being like, this is what I'll do while I'm there. And at the same time, I'm not going to make any commitments to this. And the first day I arrived, we were doing orientation, and Mark Kelly, who is
unbelievable,
amazing. I love Mark. He was like, this is where you'll be grinding if you need to grind. And he like points to like the outdoor area that's like under a foot of snow. And I was like, okay. All right. I'm just going
to
take
welcome
all
to
of
John
this
Sound.
And throw it in the trash.
Welcome to John Sound in the winter. Go
yeah,
ahead.
And that was good for me, because I mean, I did still drag a vise outside at least once a day and grind a bunch of stuff and cut some stuff, but for the most part, it pushed me into a zone of like, you're here to forge and to like develop and experiment in that respect. And it kind of took this like pressure off of myself. I was like putting this needless pressure to like create a sculpture while I was there, and mostly just experimented and found my way to a lot of questions and curiosities that I had, and like all of these things I'd been just wanting to try so badly. And but having the guidance of Mark and Pat and all of the other artists that were there, who were incredible, I just came back having tried so many cool new things, and my instincts completely shifted. Huh. Like this feeling of like, oh, you know, forging is just a means to an end, and like I don't want to turn that forge on if I don't have to, and if I can fabricate it faster, I will. I started just getting really into the habit of spending hours in front of the forge every day when I was there, and being very comfortable around the forge and the hammers, and really getting acquainted with all of these tools that are, you know, like, it's important to say, like, I don't have still at this point, like, a ton of formal training in forging. So, like, I'm, you know, figuring it out as I go. But I had never like drifted anything or used a bolster or, you know, on and on and on. So I just felt like an exponential amount of growth while I was there. And I just had the greatest time ever. I love it. I miss it so much.
It's such a, what's interesting is how, and you know, I have Pat on here once a month and I love it. And I love it. I love it because I love what he has done with CMA. And, you know, the stories are out. I used to be at where Center for Metal Arts first used to be in Florida, New York. Center for Metal Arts was kind of, it was part of Fine Architectural Metalsmiths. Fine Architectural Metalsmiths was the fabrication end, and then they had Center for Metal Arts attached to it, and we would have people come to teach. And then, but it wasn't like something that was the what was focused upon. So I left, and then when Pat came, he really seized on the Fine Architectural Metalsmiths fabrication end. He just seized the Center for Metal Arts. And something that I've always felt was he, since the beginning, is I just...
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Loved what he started with. And I saw it before he got his hands on it. And now that I've seen what he's done, not only has he created this incredible facility, but there's so much love in it and so much attention. And it's not like I've been to schools where they're just like looking for enrollment and looking for the money and looking for filling the spots. And it's just like a day job. It's like a 9-to-5 Center for Mental Arts. There's so much care and attention into the experience that I am a disciple. I am all in, and I'm grateful for the fact that I got to see from where it came from to where it is. And I just know, talking to Pat Quinn, and when I have him on here, and I've had him on here a lot, I have him on here once a month, he's one of the most well-spoken and nuanced voices in metalworking that I've ever met or talked to. And he's incredibly articulate. He's incredibly passionate. He's got such a laser-like attention to what he wants, but there's so much organic love in what he's doing that I am just like, I'm a devotee. I'm a devotee. What is it? I'm like an acolyte.
I'm an acolyte.
I'm an acolyte.
Me too.
I'm an acolyte. I'm a believer.
I came home and told Frank, like, this is the blacksmithing organization that I want to throw my weight and resources behind, like, moving forward. And, you know, doesn't mean much now, but hopefully at some point it will. But, like, I'm the kind of person that doesn't want to go anywhere without Frank, doesn't really want to leave home. I'm a total homebody. I don't like flying. I'm terrified of flying. Very comfortable being in a warm climate where I can get, like, all the, you know, I have amazing food at my fingertips here. And I went there for 2 weeks, and that's also the longest. I mean, I've done a few stints of, like, work travel that I've been gone for 2 weeks. It's, like, the longest I've ever been away from Frank. And I was like, I was doing fantastic. Yeah. I didn't miss home. Like, I missed Frank, of course, but, like, I was not homesick. I love it there so much. Like, from the point of, like, with the residency, because that was a different experience than the Power Hammer lessons that I got from Pat the first time. And will be different than classes I'm going to try to take there in the future. But it's luxurious. Like, they have worked so hard, and it is such a nice shop that is so well equipped. And to have people like Pat and Mark on hand in the room, checking in with you, making sure you have everything you need. All the materials are there. They're asking you, like, hey, do you think you'll need more of this? Like, and then, you know, if you're pontificating about something and you're lucky enough that, like, Pat will walk up and just be like, hey, what are you working on? And you're like, oh, I don't know. And he's like, well, I'm curious, let's try it, you know. And it's like the passion, and I've always said this about Pat, that he's just made a safe environment for people to learn, and you can just feel like you don't know everything, and that's a good place to be while you're there. And between the way that they run that place and the whole team, Heidi and Nate, like, everyone is just warm and kind and helpful. And I just, you know, it's kind of like a second home to me at this point.
Do you know the reason why? One of the reasons is because they're very organized, you know.
And yeah.
We've talked about, I mean, I've had a Pat on here and we talk about, you know, organization and discipline and stuff like that. And the reason why people are having such a good experience is because he basically uses the principles of forging in executing an experience for the student. Mm-hmm. So everything is really very thoughtful, thought out, practiced, researched, and then executed. And it's a winner. I would never be so effusive about something. Trust me. Oh my God, I am a miserable bastard. When the bike is off, I would never put both feet in on the situation if it wasn't the case. But no. I'm really glad you had. So what did you end up coming up out with in 2 weeks?
I was doing some weird, like, so me and Pat started experimenting with, like, some just fullers and putting some wire and smushing it into things. And I was, so I wound up doing some really weird textures, made my own top tools for the first time, which like probably pretty pedestrian for most people, but it was a demystification process for me for sure, that like now I feel like I can make whatever I want. Yeah, just mostly working on textures. I mean, I was only there for 2 weeks, and that'll go by really fast, even if you're in there like 12 hours a day, you know?
Yeah, he doesn't play. People are in there all night long sometimes.
Yeah,
And he's there right beside him. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that Pat's dedication and tenacity and like his curiosity are, I mean, I think what makes him such an incredible sculptor in and of himself, but then also like, he's an amazing educator and like mentor as well. And which is why actually I'm trying to, I probably shouldn't talk about this, but I have applied for his School is Cool program this year. I have not heard whether I've gotten accepted. I think that every year it's getting more and more competitive to get into the programs there, which is amazing. But if I don't get it this year, I'll just keep applying. And
would you please do me one favor?
Hmm.
If you, when you get in, I'm saying it from without knowing. I'm saying that completely within the confines of you and me talking together, and I have my confidence in you. You got to call me up first because I want to hear how you're feeling about it. I don't want to put a can of her on the whole thing, but at the same time, I'm so glad that you're gonna do that. I think or you're applying for. I shouldn't do it. It's a can of horror. It's a Jewish thing where it's basically a jinx. I don't want to jinx it for you.
Me neither. I almost like didn't want to say it out loud, but at the same time,
okay.
Like,
it's okay.
At this point I've thought about that particular program and class so much because I had to put my references together and write about it. And even if I don't get accepted, I still in my mind have to kind of earmark that time. So I'm not like double booking in case I do get accepted. And so I've thought about it so much and I just think and I've heard from people that have taken it, that it is incredible class. And I think it'll really help me with my upcoming demonstrations. And I get asked a lot about teaching and doing workshops that I actually might be able to, this will enfranchise me if I get it, to be able to go into those opportunities with confidence.
All right. I want to stop us because I also want to make sure that we do not put the jinx in. And if you don't get it, it's not the end of the world either. At some point, I want to just make sure that there's no like, I don't want to make sure the fix is in or the fix isn't in. Just we're positive, but at the same time, we're accepting.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I think
expectations.
Yeah.
What is the expectations low, acceptance high?
Yes. By the time this airs, I imagine that the it will be announced. So this is not influencing anything.
Right.
Pat,
if you're listening, expectations low, acceptance high. Okay. And I say acceptance high.
Man.
Acceptance high as in if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. We're
not this year. Anyways,
we are completely with love in our hearts and zen in our minds that we are just the willow and we will be flexible like the willow. Okay. So don't worry about that. All right, let me leave it alone. Next thing, what is this whole Can Iron thing that you're going to be going to? What is Can Iron and what's going on?
Can Iron is a biennial blacksmithing event for all of Canada. So I think when Justin reached out to me and asked me to do it, I was like, yeah, sure, because of, what we were talking about before, just always saying, just the habit of saying yes to everything, but also it just sounded fun. And I've been really curious about Canada. And I feel like I have a lot of folks up there that I'd like to meet and hang out with. So, but this is the 14th biennial Canada.
Biennial means once a year.
Every 2 years.
Every 2 years.
Once every 2 years.
Why? What are these? What is Justin and Lando saying biennial for? Like they know what that word means. These two.
I wouldn't know what it meant if I hadn't already been to a biennial blacksmithing event Italy.
Okay. So it's once every 2 years, and it's going to be, where is it going to be?
It's going to be in Manitoba.
Manitoba.
Yeah, Austin, Manitoba.
And is it going to be a live thing, or what's going to happen?
Yes, it's an in-person blacksmithing event. The headliners are Pat Quinn.
Wow.
And Jake James.
Wow.
And Noah Vachon.
Love that. I love that guy.
Ryan Bellanger. Mm-hmm. And so on and so forth. And then there's little old me as well.
Get out of here.
I'm mostly like, when they said that Pat and Jake would be the other demonstrators, I was like, I'm in. I mean, I want to talk about I would love to know the details, but I'm in. I'm doing it. I would love that. Having spent time with Pat, obviously, like, I relish all the opportunities to hang out with Pat because he is such a thoughtful, awesome, amazing person, and I consider him a dear friend. and the same with Jake James. Like, I got to meet him in we were demonstrating at Spring Conference in San Diego along Zevik Gottlieb and Ellen Durkin.
It's my brother.
I know, me too.
Zevik is my guy.
Yeah.
Zevik is my guy. I got stories with Zevik.
He's rad. He's awesome. So anyways, yeah, so I got to know Jake from that event, and we've just stayed in touch, and so I just, you know, I'm going to be demonstrating the whole time, but also hopefully getting to spend some time with those guys and seeing what Canada's all about, you know? One small part.
Yeah, so what are you going to be demonstrating?
I'm going to be demonstrating a flower build, and I think what I would like to do, because I have been giving a lot of thought to what sort of sets me apart from other blacksmiths, or where my value is most accentuated within the community, or what I could really contribute. and hearing like younger artists like asking me specific questions, I would really like for day one to be a demonstration of building a model. So like start to finish, I can bang out a pretty elaborate model in 8 hours because I'm getting that fast at it. And as long as I like know what I'm doing, I think I could definitely do that, or at least do half a day of model. And then taking that and, demonstrating how I take a model and literally put a tape up to it and start breaking it down into its geometric forms, and then forging those pieces and then fabricating it all together.
Wow. So will there be tents, or how are all the demonstrators, you have to just decide what you're going to see? Is it kind of like Maker Camp where everybody's going to be doing different things, or is there like a center stage? Or
I think it'll be less like Maker Camp. Maker Camp has so many different demonstrations and so many different vendors that it's almost overwhelming. And half the time I don't see, like I tend to miss a lot, which is a good thing. It's good that there's so much going on that you like can't see it all. Like that's like those music festivals where it's like, fuck, if I go to this thing, I'm not going to see that thing. Like this is more, I think, in the vein of like my experience with California Blacksmith Association. Our spring conference is usually that, you know, there's three or four demonstrations happening at the same time, but those people are in that area demonstrating for 8 hours or like 2 4-hour segments all day long. So like they're there for 3 days and they're building a sculpture from start to finish, and so people kind of just wander around and like pop back in, like to watch me build something all day long. It's possible that people will sit there and do that, but they'll probably like want to just kind of rotate and walk around and keep checking back in, unless they're very curious about like a specific part of the process. And then after the 3 days of building, you're ideally finished with that piece, and then it usually goes into an auction.
Huh. So Can Iron is going to be similar, or?
I believe so. It sounds like that's what their formatting is. And, you know, like they're still gathering the details, and I've gotten my handler, Chris, has been pretty good about letting me know what's going on. But it's my understanding that it's going to be very similar programming wise.
So what are the dates of the event?
August 7th through the 10th.
Oh,
I believe.
It's a short one.
Yeah, it's like 3 or 4 days.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It sounds like a lot of fun. They got some heavy hitters going to Can Iron.
Yeah, and I'm really excited about the food.
Oh, tell me about the food.
I remember like listening to Justin and Lando talk about it on the podcast, Forthside Chat. But like, it's being catered, and it sounds like the catering company is like pretty baller, and that like the food is going to be fantastic. Huh. So, I think that something that we like, I think that blacksmiths and food go hand in hand. I think for a lot of us, food is also one of our love languages. And so I'm glad that they've like made that a priority.
Well, you're not wrong, because there are a lot of, there was a, back in the day before I started working as a blacksmith, the first blacksmith I ever met was Tom Ryan. Who Pat knew too, and he was the head blacksmith in Queens at this place called Koenig Ironworks. This is, you're talking 1998, and before he was a blacksmith, he was a culinary student. Mm. So there are a lot of similarities between, and I think that there's a connection, because you are taking a piece of material and kind of transforming it in the oven. You know what I mean? So it's like I think that food and sculpture are the same, where you're taking ingredients and giving proper technique, and giving it to someone. So to me, there's never really been that, it hasn't been that far of a distance in travel in terms of food and sculpture in general. So,
no, and not to get off of Can Iron, but like, that's like an important part of my experience within like the blacksmithing community. Like there's always been food in the mix. Like my friend, Sean Lavelle, she has a shop over here in Berkeley, and she has like, you know, every few weeks she has like a Friday night, like she sets up her plancha and we all just like make grilled cheeses and hang out at her shop, or you know, we go over to Jim's and have beers, Jim Austin. We have like a pretty big hub here, but I was also just thinking about it from the standpoint of what you were saying about Steve in your last episode, which I thought was really lovely, like how he was fastidiously working on these steaks, and like we're at Maker Camp, and the room that Frank and I would stay in was like you'd always have to walk past the pit, and I remember running into Steve and he looked exhausted and we were chatting, and I was like, oh, where's your room? And he's like, oh, I'm staying in my truck right here. And I was like, oh, well, you know, we have an extra bed in our room, and like you should feel free to like go in there and take a nap, or you're welcome to crash in there or like take a shower or whatever. And he just looked at me, he's like, no, I gotta stay here with the pit. He's like not willing to walk away from the barbecue, not even for a minute. Like he was just it was just that important that he was able to put all of his energy and love into that food, him and Will. And it was just a level of dedication to feeding all of his friends that I think we all kind of connect with. And like, that's, you know, Frank and I do that too. So
it's fun. It's fun to be able to cook for people. It's like cooking for someone. It's more than just eating. It's more than just like dinner time. It's nurturing someone. It's showing somebody attention to detail to a certain degree. Like I have video sent of me. I had a couple hammer-ins at the shop here, and between you, me, and the listeners, much against my better judgment, and it has nothing to do with me being not. I just didn't want to do it. Like there were people who were mad that I didn't invite them, and I said to them, "I'm like, listen, I would be perfectly happy if you came and I didn't have to go." But that's a fact. The fact is I would be perfectly happy if I didn't go. So you should be, I envy you feeling like you didn't get invited. I wish I wasn't invited. But regardless, when we were there, John Ariani brought out this huge grill, and then we put this screen on top, and then we were cooking different stations. I was doing on this one grill, and I made a paella over here, and then across from me, Steve was cooking these steaks, and we were serving it to our friends. And there is something about that is just very, very fun, you know. And I next Maker Camp, I was, you know, I'm talking to, I want to do some sort of like tribute to Steve by doing, like, maybe I'll bring my paella rig and maybe we'll make a, you know, family meal paella for Steve or something like that. But yeah, there is something about that idea of, and it's just not just about just eating, but it is like this communal situation. Like, I know that at Center for Mental Arts, you know, we go out for dinner and we're straight from the shop, and I don't know how they don't throw everybody out of there, because we come in there with some of these restaurants, some of us smell so bad, it's just like how they don't throw us out is beyond me. God bless Center for Mental Arts and Pat, because I've gone in there and I just like, I'm like, I cannot believe they didn't throw us out. I mean, we are filthy. But regardless, it's always this wonderful moment of, because, you know, those long days in the shop, and you've done, and you're just like, you're hurt a little bit, but you're hurt in a way that it's, you feel like you've done something.
Yeah.
Like, everything's a little stiff. Everything's a little sore. Everything's a little bit tired, but there's this, like, it's like the side effect of being efficient and effective, you know?
Yeah, most definitely. And I think that like CMA especially is one of those places where, like, you are breaking bread in that kitchen is where everyone hangs out the whole time, to the point, right, where, like, they need to just break down that wall and, like, make the dining room part of the kitchen, and, like, that's the future I see for the rectory. But, like, you know, I was there with a guy named Gokul, who is Indian, and he was making me dosas every night.
Oh, my God.
I'd be like, Gokul, what are you making tonight? And, you know, there was a lot of people there that were enthusiastic about cooking. And so we were eating well and, like, eating together a lot, even in the kitchen, like, when we were getting home at 10 from the shop. And those are really, like, meaningful moments that I really cherish, like hanging out with Jake Moss and Gokul and Ellen Durkin and Katie.
Durkin's strong.
Yeah, she's a freaking powerhouse.
You see those tweaking bars she has?
Yeah.
They're intense.
Yeah.
She got some tweaking bars that are intense. Those are the John made them. John made her hammers. They're unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then John made them tweaking bars, some serious tweaking bars. We don't have to say anything else. If you know, you know. Intense tweaking bars.
She doesn't leave home without them.
I don't blame her. I don't think I would either. Maybe I would. Me, personally, I would leave home without them, if you don't mind me saying. Don't ask. She's awesome. Yeah.
She also had a pair of tongs that John Williams made that I need to hit him up and be like, dude, add these to my order, please. That, like, had a you know how there's those vices, those, like, really rare vices that have, like, a pivot pin on them so that they can hold irregular things? She has a pair of vices or tongs like that have a pivot on one of the heads so that they will literally adjust and hold tapers and irregular shapes that were so freaking cool that John made for her. I think they're like I think Pat was saying that they are, like, featured heavily in, like, old Farrier books.
He's an interesting guy.
Yeah.
And I had him on the podcast when I was down there with Pat. I had him both on. If you go in the archives, there's an episode a number of years ago, and John Williams is in there. John Williams is dynamite.
Yeah,
and he comes from a real farrier standpoint. There, you know, I think that the weird part is in the blacksmithing world. One, until you get into the blacksmithing world, there's a lot of jokes about farriers. But, like, the farriers that I know, and jokes in terms of just like, oh, just shoeing horses. The farriers that I know, and offhand, John Williams, Ben Snoor, Riley Kirkpatrick, and then on and on, and John. John down at Doghouse Forge.
Yes.
They're probably some of the most efficient and effective forgers that I know. I mean, they're like, their skill set is so high and so exhausting that it's always, to me, it's always like, I love it. I mean, it's just like John Williams does, and that whole crew is like very, very effective blacksmiths.
It's funny that you say that because we had a friend over for dinner last night and they're asking me a lot of questions about like the different kinds of blacksmiths. And Frank just turned around out of nowhere and said exactly the same thing that you just said. And I was like, wow, Frank, I didn't realize I was like rubbing off on you so much and like that you are like so wonky, like that you know, like the wonk of like how I feel about farriers is that they're just incredibly efficient. And I was kind of pontificating about like why that is. And it's like, well, if you have a horse, like that's an impatient large animal that like if you're like shoeing a horse, I have to imagine that you have to be efficient and fast and just able to deal with a large animal that doesn't necessarily have the patience of, I just think that there's something to that that makes them so incredibly skilled, efficient, and capable and like creative in like an unusual way.
I had Riley Kirkpatrick on here before and I got to get him back. And Riley's unbelievable. He's so talented and he's very, very invested in the farrier world. But from what I remember him talking about going to farrier school and learning about, running a farrier business is hard because you're working with a certain amount of horses and a certain amount of ranches and every, you know, a horse hoof is like a fingernail. It grows. So every year there, every however many weeks, and you have to learn how to be effective and efficient. And they're not using giant hammers. They're not using these, none of them are using these giant, 5 pound hammers that are ridiculous as a hand hammer. They're using these small 2 and change long handled hammers, and they're very effective. I know Ben's practicing to do a tong competition with the World Blacksmith Championship. I'm supposed to have Craig on, all you farriers, and we got to figure out each other's time, but at the same time, I really, really, really invested in that. And I know that, Ben is practicing horseshoeing, he's practicing tong making. And it's this ultimate form of effectiveness and efficiency. And what it's so much practice. They have tubs and tubs of rejects. And it's like something that a lot of blacksmiths are afraid of doing, which is repetition in terms of learning how to become more effective and efficient in order to get to your final goal, which isn't today. It's tomorrow or it's the next day. And it's just like farriers, I have learned. The farriers that I know, I have nothing but incredible respect for, and it's amazing. It's amazing. I was supposed to go to Ben invited me to go to one of the things. I was really working on it, and it just didn't work out. But at some point, I'm going to go with Ben, and we're going to go watch one of those world championship blacksmithing contests. It looks insane, totally insane.
Where is it?
It's all over the West Coast.
Okay,
and it's like. There are, if you listen to the Riley Kirkpatrick episode from last year, I got to get him, Riley, I know you're listening. I got to get you back on here.
Hey, Riley.
But it's like, it is amazing because they have people in, you have specific groups based on experience. And when you win from like the novice, you get bumped into the next group. And as you compete in these groups, your ranking goes up. And then all of a sudden they kind of spit you out in the next group, and then it becomes harder. And it's just like everything about it is like, it's kind of the way blacksmithing should be in terms of getting you to the point where you want to practice so much that you will force yourself into getting better based off of like just hard work and like understanding what you need to do.
Yeah.
Farriers, don't fuck with the farriers, man.
No.
I never make jokes about farriers at all. anymore. I'm just kidding.
I also feel like I'm extremely, without really knowing much about blacksmithing, like with my limited knowledge, like I always reach for the farrier tools, and like friends of mine are like, oh, that's a farrier's hammer. That's a farrier's tongs, like and I'm like, oh, I it just seems right for me. So
right.
There's something to the amount of time and maybe that's it, is that like because it's a I was gonna get like super like heady, but like
go ahead.
Because it's the same form over and over again, the same practice over and over again, the amount of streamlining and thought and ingenuity that has been dedicated to making that as simple, concise, and clean as possible has been really well developed over the centuries.
That is definitely your end. That whole, like, the forged to finish product.
Yeah.
That is, like, really, really exceptional. The interesting thing also, as a non-farrier and not an expert, and someone who just watches, the hammer swing is totally different than a lot of hammer swings. Like, it's much more shoulder. It seems as though a lot of it is, like, elbow cocked in. And Riley, feel free to yell at me. Don't worry about it. But it feels like it's much more shoulder and then whipping that long handle down in that, you know, smaller 2.5-pound hammer. I don't even think it's 2.5, 2.25, something like that. And it's just the mechanics are different, too. It's just like everything about it is awesome. It's just like, you know, I love it. I don't like the horses.
What do you mean?
I can do without them. I can legitimately, honestly, I'm saying this with peace and love. I can do without the horses. I had a story. I'm going to say this as politely as I can. I love Jonathan Porter. Jonathan Porter, Doghouse Forge, is one of the greatest. Love him. I used to go down to his shop, and I used to teach some classes with him. We had such a good time. He's got a beautiful family. He's just a great guy. So he says, I scheduled us to go to a ranch on one of the days. He's like, one of the days before the class started. I want you to come with me to the ranch. I want you to watch me. Sure, I think you'd like it. And I was thrilled. I wanted to see it. I wanted to see how he does it. We go to this ranch, got two horses, and it's hot as hell. Florida, it's hot. This is right before COVID, like a day before they shut the whole joint down. And he gets all his stuff out of the trailer, and he gets the horse out. He's a real animal guy. A lot of these, I think when you're a farrier, you have to like animals. See, I'm not cut out. I mean, I like them, but it's like, I don't love them. You know what I mean? Like, I'm for them, but I ain't with them. You know what I'm saying? Am I making clear?
I'm not trying. I'm the opposite. I'm an animal person.
Listen. When I go get the dog food at the pet store and they ask me if I want to donate $5, I say yes. Okay? I say yes. And I don't even hesitate. I'll be like, oh, gee. I'm not like one of these guys, you're hawking me for China all the time. I'm like, yes, $5 taken for the dog. I like animals. That's enough. You get me. So we're in this pen and the horse comes out and then there's another horse. And I'm looking at the horse, and the horse is making noises. And then I'm like, I noticed that the horse that's in the pen is making a lot of noises. And I said to John, he's got a puff up, and he's taking the nails out, and he's clipping the thing. I'm watching and watching. And then I heard this thumping noise from one of the horses. And I said, John, what's that thumping noise? He says, well, I think the horse is excited to see you. He likes you. And I'm going to leave it there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was banging on the drum, and I'll just leave it there. And I was like, well, tell him I ain't interested. And then I'm just like, this horse business is not for me. I don't want any horses thumping. I don't want any of it. I'm out. And I'm just like, I like the forging and I like all that stuff. I don't need the animal part of it, but I respect it.
I try to be horses. Polite.
You do?
I do. I had a horse growing up. Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Well, like, had a horse is like maybe not like my one of my mom's best friends had a horse on her property. Her name was Moonshine. She was this beautiful Palomino. And every time we went over there, I would just go ride her. And so then Mary was like, I should move her to this ranch that was right down the street from my house. And so we did. And so she kind of became my horse because I was like splitting the board.
What's that? Splitting the board?
Like paying for room and board for the horse.
I thought that was some sort of horse
at the
trick.
Ranch. No.
I am like the stupidest guy. Oh, that must be some trick where they jump over a board and then they split it in two.
I was paying for Moonshine's rent at this.
I'm legitimately thinking that must be some sort of equestrian trick. Splitting the board. No, it's paying half the rent, asshole.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, Jeff.
No, literally room and board.
It's literally like paying the rent. I am the dumbest.
No.
Splitting the board. Yes.
But you know, it came to an end when this like Italian fashion designer brought his stallion and to Deep Hollow, which was the ranch where my horse was, and I went to go get her out of the field one day, and her ears were back, and she did not want to come with me. She did not want to like leave this other horse, and that, you know, that was the beginning of the end. She was in love with this other horse, and she didn't want to be taken out of the field. She didn't want to be ridden anymore. And so that's when, I think that I, you know, my mom tried to get me into English riding, 'cause that was a Western ranch, like Western style. And as soon as I got into the English stuff, in East Hampton, went to Stony Hill Stables for one lesson, and was like, "This place is fucking pretentious, and I don't want to do this. Like, I just want to be with Moonshine, you know."
I thought you were gonna tell me this story. Like, yeah, Moonshine didn't want to come out of that field, so they strapped him with the cinder block shoes, and gave it to you. That was the end of old Moonshine.
I don't know what happened to Moonshine.
Long Island horse trick.
I hope she lived a long and happy life.
Yeah, let's hope so. It didn't turn into like Alpo. No disrespect to Moonshine, but I mean, come on, you don't want to leave that field.
Yeah,
these horse lovers, they love them to a certain degree, and then I'm saying? What happened to Moonshine? Ah, the ears went back. As soon as the ears go back, call Alpo. They're callous. Some of these horse people are callous. Don't tell me I'm wrong, Riley Kirkpatrick. Don't tell me I'm wrong. Some of them straight to Alpo.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I swear to God, the one last thing I'll say about farriers is when I was at the Center for Mental Arts originally, there was a guy who was he assists us every so often, and he would be a farrier's assistant. He was the first person I ever met who would go to help the farriers. And he said that he met this farrier who was like hunched over. He was older. He only worked 3 days a week, and he was just in terrible pain, arthritis everywhere, because how hard it is on your body, especially as you get older. And I was recounting this story to this person, and I was like, I met this fairy. She goes, no, it's called ferrier. And I'm like, what? She's French. Ferrier. I'm like, the fuck out of here. We're in Middletown, New York. Don't tell me. Don't start giving me French pronunciations of a word that we all know no one in this country says. Respectfully. So that's the only thing I remember is I got chastised on how I pronounce farrier. And I'm not going to change.
Well, that's what I didn't realize this, but that's what the Ferrari is. A horse.
Is that
like,
is that where it
logo.
Comes from?
Yeah.
Is there a connection? Ferrari and farrier are the same thing?
I think so.
Look at you. Look at you.
I don't know where I learned that.
I love that. That, you know what? Even if it isn't true, it's now.
It is.
True. It is now 100% true. You hear that? All you farriers out there? Ferrari. Y'all got to start driving Ferraris. That's now. A guy like Riley Kirkpatrick. Good-looking guy, smart, he knows what he's doing, very capable. When he pulls up to that ranch with that trailer attached to a Ferrari, oh, jeez. Like, and he's got that mustache. He could do like a Magnum P.I. thing.
I can see it.
Oh,
I can
my
see it.
God. And then the price goes up. Oh, can you imagine? You're on this ranch, and a guy shows up in a Ferrari. The farrier shows up in a Ferrari, and you're just like, I am going to get boned. That Billy gonna give me? I am.
This is
boned.
Gonna be the most expensive pair of horseshoes I've ever paid for.
Oh my God! What happened? He showed up in a Ferrari. Oh my God! Don't show up in a Ferrari when you're on to do a job and on a job site. Oh my God, that's hilarious. So what else is going on? What's new? What do we have to look forward to? Leah Arapach, I'm so glad you're here. I'm so glad you're back.
I'm super glad to be here. It's so nice to sit down and talk with you. Yeah, more of the same at this point. I endeavored into this, like, I'm starting a series right now, in earnest. Like, I've gotten a lot of things out of my system, tried a lot of things, and now I'm really just starting to hone in on this idea of a show that I don't have anywhere to put it yet, but I need to like kind of build it anyways. That's going to be centered around like my experience in my gardens, and it's all going to be about I want the viewer to kind of be in my gardens, in my world. So I came back from the Center for Metal Arts having the courage to finally start a sculpture that I had built the model for a year or two ago and just kind of sat on it, 'cause I was like, I don't know if I have the skills to do this yet.
Wow.
And I knew that I wanted to incorporate some copper mai that Coy Baker had sent me. And I have a very cool skull piece that's going on this caterpillar that I want to do in copper mai. And when I started working on the model, Josh Prince called me and was like, I'm going to send you something. And so he sent me this panel, this jelly roll panel that is going to go down the front up until it hits the legs. So I started working on that piece, about 2 weeks ago, and it's going really well. I'm having a great time. It's going really fast, which is just kind of always blows my mind, how much faster things are when you're doing them using blacksmithing techniques as opposed to trying to fabricate them. But I think actually I kind of started this piece right as I found out that Steve was in trouble and not entirely sure what was going to happen there, and started feeling a lot of grief in the shop, and utilizing this, I finally started using my guillotine tool that Cliff and John had made for me, and was using all these beautiful hammers that John has made for me, Ben has made for me, top tools that Dennis Dushek has made for me, and I'm forging this tube, which is something that I've seen Megan Crowley do, and just kind of thinking about all of these people that just touch my life and are with me all the time. And it really got me through the beginning of that build, and feeling distressed and concerned, but also just needing to push forward and carrying on this thought process of what would Steve do, or just knowing him to be a tenacious, hardworking person that just kept pushing forward, and wanting this build to keep moving forward, and for my courage to stay up. And so I feel like I'll probably never look at this piece and not think of Steve. And I think that's a good thing. I love how this community is so tight, and we're all interconnected and interwoven, whether it's that we're literally using each other's knives or tools or have each other's art in our homes, and also just all of the memories and the experience and the things we teach each other that we just carry with us everywhere we go, that in the face of loss makes me think that we're kind of always with each other. And so that was sort of the theme and feelings and vibes that I had around this piece, especially having come from the Center for Metal Arts, where now I've got Pat and Mark in my head and being you can do it. You're fine. You know what you're doing. You can do it. And I just didn't think I was ready to tackle this piece. And I came back and I felt confident, and it's just been an absolute joy, and it's going to kick off this whole series of really, really fun pieces that are all about being in a really trippy, weird garden. And so that's what I'll be working on this year, trying to hone my demonstration skills, going to Can Iron. Got a few other things in the works, but they're not solid, so I don't want to announced, but I might be traveling around a bit in the U.S. too. So
you can't get much better than that. One thing I have to say about you, which is to me is a testament to who you are, is you're traditionally a metal worker. Before you started forging, you were a metal worker, a lot of fabrication stuff, a lot of grinding, a lot of welding, a lot of fabricator. The bladesmithing and blacksmithing world are so behind you And it's so wonderful to see how encouraging and how behind you they are. Yes, Seth Lopez and Josh Prince and all these knife makers and Steve and me and all these guys and all these blacksmiths. You have such a great group of people who really care about you and believe in you. And we're all not fat. Most of us are fabricators. Most of these motherfuckers can't weld. You know, just to let you know, I mean, Chris Cash, get the fuck out of here. Yeah, my motherfucker can't weld. Just kidding, Chris. You know, you don't listen to this. Don't worry about that. But it is amazing how these communities have believe in you. And I know that Steve would be fired up for you and everything you're doing. And I appreciate the hell out of you. And anything you need, you know, we got your back. And you're fantastic. And I wish you nothing but success and happiness.
Thank you so much, Jeff. Yeah, you and everyone else in the community mean a huge deal to me. And you guys are my family. And I don't know how I got so lucky to have so many people support me and believe in me and just feel like I'm just constantly being encouraged and enfranchised by all these people that have all this knowledge and I love you all.
All right. Well, I'm going to say something obnoxious because I think a lot of these guys are merit-based. They're merit-based friendships. All their friendships are merit-based, and I think that you've probably tapped into their, you know, merit-based care. So yeah, if you take it as a compliment, I would.
That means a lot to me. Yeah,
look, they all believe in you. I mean,
I'm not a nepo baby.
They're scum. No, you're not a nepo baby. Most of them are scum. Honestly, I've met most of these guys. Most of them are scum, me included. And most of it is merit based. So you've done it. You've done everything. You're the best, Lee Arapach. I'm so happy you're here. I'm looking forward to hearing more about Can Iron. Guys, go to wherever Can Iron is doing their thing. I know that over those two boys over there, Justin and Lando, are doing something over their podcast, but go to Can Iron, and I would highly suggest going to see this event, because if you're in Canada and you have the opportunity to see these guys, you're going to see some of the best around in that very tight community, and apparently they're feeding everybody. So what's so good about that? Lee Arapach, you know where she is. All the information is going to be in the show notes where you hear this. Guys, I cannot thank you enough for all the nice support we've had over the past few weeks, especially during this whole the Steve thing, and we're sending our best. The couple last minute things, the GoFundMe for his family and wife are up on the bio at Full Blast Podcast on Instagram. And number two is I am running the New York City Marathon, and I am raising money for the Michael J. Fox Foundation. And if you want to get on board, support my old ass getting over the finish line, 26 point something miles, go to Full Blast Podcast on Instagram. There is a link to the donation thing for the Michael J. Fox Foundation and supporting your boy. Support your boy. Guys, thank you so much, Leah.
Thank you for having me.
Easy money. Guys, we're going to see you next week. Thank you so much.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.